Blog Talk Radio. We're having a lot of two news stories on involving the Pacific Ocean. First, of course, the Malaysian jet, which still hasn't been found, or the black box ever will be found. Then this latest one, the Kaufman family from San Diego, had a projected around-the-world sailing trip with their boat, and then they brought their two babies with them. Well, one of the children, the child was sick anyway, but they claimed they have antibiotics. The boat got disabled, and also the child was terribly ill. And so they put out a Mayday call for the California, I think, Air National Guard to come out there and try to rescue him, and a Navy frigate. Well, there's a lot of strange things these people are doing with children these days. We're seeing kids, babies on bicycles, passengers without any, they shouldn't be on a bicycle anyway, with their parents, and they have no seat belts or anything. And we're seeing all kinds of crazy things done with children in vehicles. Now, it's just, there's a question of the Kauffmans. Without the Kauffmans, in this sailing trip around the world, at least around the Pacific, with babies, is this child endangerment question? And should the Kauffmans have to reimburse the government for the expenses of rescuing them? Now, the other thing that's hit the news, and, of course, those of us who are on the Internet, I have used Firefox. There's a lot of problems with it. Now, this whole gay agenda against Mozilla's chief executive, who made in the past a campaign contribution with the California proposition to strike down or prevent gay marriage in the state. Now, was this any business? He didn't bring this political campaign preferences into the workplace. He's known as computer programming genius, which Mozilla and Firefox need. And the other question is, now, are other executives and other, is this going to be a litmus test for other people in industries where they, as individuals, own different views and different practices from these gay political propagandists and activists? We experience a resurgence of gay Nazi Ernest Rohr's gay political agenda. Remember, he was the guy, the homosexual, who brought Hitler to power. He said Hitler was too conservative. He started the SA, which was bully boys who were gay, and then the pedophilia, and a lot of the so-called straight Nazis, Himmler and Goebbels, hated Rome, and Himmler couldn't wait for it to eliminate Rome and all of his followers, and they did that in the infamous Night of the Long Knives. Which, of course, Himmler got rid of a rival. Among the other birthdays, got some events today. Of course, Mickey Rooney died at 93, and he had a long career, and he spent a lot of money. But what's also interesting, you might call these political animals, Walter Houston, who's the father of John Houston and the grandfather of Angelica Houston. Walter Houston was born in Toronto, Canada. We've got a lot of our actors, Marie Dressler, America's Sweetheart, all came from Canada. Walter Houston was the first Canadian to portray Abraham Lincoln. I think it was in a D.W. Griffith film. And then, of course, another Canadian, Raymond Massey, of the famous Massey Tractor family and aristocrats in Canada. Raymond Massey was the second Canadian to portray Abraham Lincoln. In fact, I think we have that clip. You go, Abraham Lincoln. Of course, it's interesting because I don't have the Walter Houston. We'll play that another day. The Lincoln-Douglas debate. I think that's interesting. This is Raymond Massey.
Don't kill him, Abe!
Judge Douglas has paid tribute to my skill with the dagger. I thank him for that, but I must admit that he can do more with that weapon than I can. He can keep 10 daggers flashing in the air at the same time. Fortunately, he's so good at it that none of the knives ever falls and hurts anyone. Now, you've heard the judge make allusion to those who advocate voting and eating and marrying and sleeping with Negroes. Whether he meant me specifically, I do not know. If he did, I can only say that just because I do not want a colored woman for a slave, I do not necessarily want her for a wife. I do not need to have her for either. I can just leave her alone. In some respects, she is certainly not my equal any more than I am the judge's equal in some respects. But in her natural right to eat the bread she earns with her own hands without asking leave of somebody else, she is my equal and the equal of all others. Now, you heard the judge speak about our own labor conditions. As an American, I cannot be proud that such conditions exist. But as an American, I can ask, would any of the striking workers in the North elect to change places with the slaves in the South? Will they not rather say the remedy is in our hands and still is an American? I can say, thank God we live under a system by which men have the right to strike. I am not preaching rebellion. I don't have to. This country with its institutions belongs to the people who inhabit it. Whenever they shall grow weary of the existing government, they can exercise their constitutional right of amending it, or their revolutionary right to dismember or overthrow it. If the founding fathers gave us anything, they gave us that. The purpose of the Dred Scott decision is to make property and nothing but property of the Negro in all states of the Union. It is the old issue of human rights versus property rights. It is the eternal struggle between two principles. The one, the common right of humanity. The other, the divine right of kings. It is the same spirit which says you toil and work and earn bread and I'll eat it. As a nation, we began by declaring all men are created equal. There was no mention of any exception to that rule in the Declaration of Independence. But we now practically read it, all men are created equal except Negroes. If we are to accept this doctrine of race or class discrimination, what is to stop us in future from decreeing all men are created equal except Negroes, foreigners, Catholics, Jews, or just poor people? That is the conclusion towards which the advocates of slavery are driving us. Let each state mind its own business, says Judge Douglas. Why stir up trouble? This is the complacent policy of indifference to evil. And that policy I cannot but hate. I hate it because of the monstrous injustice of slavery itself. I hate it because it deprives our republic of its just influence in the world. Enables the enemies of free institutions everywhere to taunt us as hypocrites. Causes the real friends of freedom to doubt our sincerity. And especially because it forces so many good men among ourselves into an open war with the very fundamentals of civil liberty. Denying the good faith of the Declaration of Independence and insisting that there is no right principle of action but self-interest. In his final words tonight, the judge said that we can be the terror of the world. I don't think we want to be that. I think we would prefer to be the encouragement of the world. The proof that at last man is worthy to be free. But we shall provide no such encouragement unless we can establish our ability as a nation to live and grow. And we shall surely do neither if these states fail to remain united. There can be no distinction in the definition of liberty as between one section and another, one class and another, one race and another. A house divided against itself cannot stand. This government cannot endure permanently, half slave and half free.
Well, we got that one. Now, also on this day, T. Barnum, Phileas T. Barnum, was born. We also had Walter Winchell, the gossip columnist. Walter Winchell, Russian Jewish heritage, born in New York. He perfected the 160 words a minute in a machine gun style, I guess you could call it that. He had a checkered career. He came up during the 50s with this story on which glorified and fictionalized Elliot Ness, who was a revenue agent sent to Chicago to try to investigate Al Capone and help bring Capone down. Elmer Irie was the Treasury Department's accountant who, along with a flying squad from the Justice Department and the Hoover administration, came to Chicago and got a hold of Al Capone's books and got him on income. Elliot Ness really had very little to do with bringing down Al Capone. Elliot Ness was glorified way beyond anything that he ever accomplished in Chicago. He later went to Cleveland, where he failed there also. But yet it was great entertainment that Walter Winchell came up with. And it was Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball, their production company, that put this together, this fiction. And, of course, there have been several movies, The Untouchables. The last one, which is certainly controversial, with Kevin Costner and Sean Connery. The Sean Connery character in that movie, it was never verified that the Untouchables made the comment that if they come at you with a bat, you come at them with a gun, that kind of thing. It's all scriptwriter's fiction. And they now want to name the building after Elliot Ness, two Illinois senators, and they're going to regret this. This is like naming a building after I wouldn't say Adolf Hitler, but another big phony, Wilfred Irvin, who was also a writer. This is the political agenda of our time. Now, I have a picture here that we discovered of a man who spit on a cop, and he was asked to leave a premises, and apparently he spit on the cop, and this is how the picture, the booking photo, portrays what happened to him. So it'll be interesting to see if he claims police brutality. First, if you spit on somebody, you have no way of knowing if that person has tuberculosis, AIDS, any communicable disease. So I guess you could say he got what he deserved, and he should do those things. Now, I did say we were going to play Pierre Monteux rearranged for symphony orchestra. And I think I have it here. It was Pierre Monteux's birthday, and we always wanted to honor him. I was a great teacher, a great conductor, made a lot of fine recordings. And here's the original version of it.
Yes, the course avant traité to play the official version, not any arrangement. Right? Thank you.
Said he was going to live to be 100, just like Leopold Stokowski, another great conductor, but he didn't last that long. And I think we'll end with this last thing, Al Capone. Let's see where he is. Nobody quits Al Capone. Here, I've read some clips from that film, Al Capone, starring Rod Steiger.
You wouldn't double cross me, I'm not much.
Well, you're right. Yeah, you're right. I took the deal. I went with Moran, and you know why? Because you're through. You're on your way out.
Wait a minute. Now, let's understand each other. You're quitting me for Moran, right?
You heard it.
All right. Remember one thing. Anybody quits Capone, it's a big gamble.
Is that so?
That's so.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't threaten me, fat boy. You've been killing your own kind. But you haven't killed a cop, and you'll never touch a newspaper man. Because if you do, that's really gambling.
In the article, they did change the name of Jake Lingle. Jake Lingle was Roman Catholic and buried in Mount Carmel Cemetery in suburban Chicago. And it's known as the Boot Hill for gangsters. Also, all the Catholic archbishops and major priests of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago, they are also buried in Mount Carmel, but not in the same section as Al Capone and Jake Lingle, some of these other people. I don't know where Jaime Weiss is buried. Jaime Weiss was not Jewish. He adapted the name because he felt to give him more prestige. Now, I remember as a boy, it was third grade at Holy Name Cathedral. The priest took us around to the front of the church cathedral and pointed out the bullet hole. I knew Weiss had double-crossed somebody, and they were after him. He ran up the steps of the cathedral and tried to get into the church, figuring it was sanctuary, and they wouldn't dare kill a man in the church, but they shot him on the steps and a bunch of bullet holes in the limestone. I understand they've been covered up. Now, across the street years ago was a flower shop. That was Dean O'Banion, who was also connected to the mob, the Irish mob, but he was the florist to the gang, to the mafia. And whenever there was a funeral, they would buy their flowers from Dean O'Banion. And one day, he needed flowers for the funeral. He got blown away. So we'll end with our usual politics and poker. Well, here's a clip of, and this is very accurate, Jake Lingle, after he quit Capone, he goes to the Illinois Central Railroad Station, which is like the BART or the Washington Metro, and he's going to the track. He owed a lot of money. So this is that clip of him, and it's very accurate of how he was murdered by the Capone mob. These episodes in The Untouchable are accurate, unfortunately, most of it is not. Only but our usual politics and poker, we'll be back Wednesday at 8:30 Pacific Standard Time, and we'll be putting up more of our archival records into the correspondence we had with the feds on public corruption and related subjects here in California, in particular San Francisco and Sacramento. So here's a goodbye for today, politics and poker. Because I don't think anybody's playing politics or poker. There are a lot of people are ducking. And, of course, the light truth will run them, and they'll be exposed for all the corruption that they've been involved.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play,
what to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, playing for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average guy a heavy smoker. There's a nominee and give him a regard. And watch while he learns that in poker and politics, brother, you gotta have that slippery, haphazardous commodity. You gotta have the card.
Well, good night, folks. We'll be back with Civic Standards. Go to our YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS. Good night.